Yeah. Check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Make sure you guys bookmark our profile so you can come back and check us out on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the same time, and the other hosts as well on UCY every day of the week, pretty much all day, so make sure you check it out. And I'm joined by my co-host here, DB. How's it going, man?
What's up, Nick? Just watching, looks like the beginning of some crazy stuff going on in Ukraine, and I don't know, the beginning, the first gate being opened, as we like to say, and who knows what it'll become of it.
I know, man. It's really complicated what's going on over there, you know, so we're going to try to get into that tonight and try to decode exactly, you know, what it is that's happening and who are the players that are behind it all, because it's definitely not what we're seeing on TV, you know, so.
Oh, not at all.
Now, make sure you guys check out the site. I mean, it's about to go back live, hopefully tonight, actually, around midnight, maybe tomorrow morning. And we're all on some brand new servers, got some changes made to the site. So it's going to be a lot better, a lot quicker, a lot faster. And I don't know, it's going to be able to support all the people trying to read it, because that was the problem is, you know, we didn't have enough bandwidth for all the people that were going to the site. So now it should be fixed. And we're going to add some new writers too once we go back up this week. And so we'll talk about that maybe on Wednesday, but we got some exciting new writers coming on too, so you know, hopefully we'll be able to get in and cover this debacle that's going on here in Ukraine, and then hopefully put a stop to any kind of, you know, who knows what they're going to try to amp this thing up to be, and if the U.S. is going to try to start talking like we're going to put some people in play over there. I mean,
right?
We definitely can't let that happen. You know?
Well, here's the thing. It's like, most people don't know, but we're basically in a silent war with China, and people in the know kind of understand that already. We're shooting back and forth all this high tech weaponry, and that includes earthquakes and all this crazy extreme weather. And yeah, you can believe they have their own harp too. And then to have that plus a conventional all out proxy war with Russia, I mean, that's going to just drain the. We're already broke. I mean. So it's if we have to take on two world powers at the same time, even if it's indirectly, it's just not good for us at all. It's going to probably implode the economy, and maybe that's the plan the whole time. You know?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we we've also been talking about these bankers that have been dying, you know, and obviously this kind of goes along with that. I think that it's a dual prong catastrophe that we're going to be faced with some type of economic issues, while at the same time having to deal with these guys trying to start up basically, you know, what could turn into World War III. I know we said that back during the Syria days, but all of this stuff is connected. I mean, if you look, it's the same players that we were dealing with in Syria, we're dealing with now in Ukraine. You know, it's Russia, it's the U.S., it's the military-industrial complex. Now, you know, the USSR had a massive, massive amount of arms buildup, which means that they had a massive arms industry. And if you think that that Russia doesn't have its own military-industrial complex that they're dealing with, and that's really trying to push things around as well, you know, I think that's a mistake, because we know for sure that they have their own version of the NSA.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw that when they released this tape. That was a phone call from Victoria Nuland, which is a U.S. Government diplomat or whatever. And, you know, they were basically talking about, you know, we have U.S. diplomats talking about how we're going to start destabilizing the region. And they were even naming names, and they even named the guy that's now the prime minister, Yats. They named him on the phone, and Russia was able to record that call and then leak it out to the press. They leaked it out through YouTube. And then, you know, we're able to see that it's not just – yes, there is a pop –
technological difficulties there.
All right, I'm back. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I think I lost my connection for a little second, for a little bit.
Oh, we know what happened.
So, you know, Victoria Nuland comes out, and she's talking with this other guy, which is the diplomat of, you know, he's the ambassador to Ukraine from the United States, and they're basically saying, yeah, let's make the move. Let's get this thing going. Yats is our guy, you know. So yes, there is a popular uprising, but at the same time, there's definitely some kind of overt Western stuff. And then Russia is reacting because Russia knows what happened, because Russia has their own NSA, and obviously they had those phone tap because they released the one video just to make us look like idiots.
Well, yeah, I mean, any of the pertinent technology, which is stuff that you can actually use, they're pretty much at the level we're at, if not higher in certain things as far as computer cryptography and stuff like that. I mean, after all, they basically write security software for us. So, I mean, how many backdoors do they put into our own stuff? I mean, how funny is that? So it's all tied in. It's all mutually assured destruction at this point, and it's just going to be nothing but proxy wars. That's all it can be. These guys are not so insane to think a nuclear exchange wouldn't put their own families in imminent harm, and they're not going to do that. They're not that insane. I mean, some of them are, but thankfully not all of them. So I don't foresee this being anything more than just a long string of proxy wars and, you know, kind of what they like to say, silent wars, like we're having with China. And if people like to look into that, it's mostly we're exchanging biological and higher technology attacks on each other's troops, essentially, whenever they're out in the field.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is that Russia basically, you know, Russia basically controls 40% of the natural gas supply to Europe, you know, and that's a huge piece of you know, of collateral. You know, it's leverage that they can use for anything, you know, anytime the European Union pisses off Russia, you know, all they have to do is flex their natural gas prices a little bit, and then Europe feels the pain right away, you know. So that's kind of their, I think that's Russia's little, you know, that's their way of keeping the EU, like, dampened, you know. And that's the reason why Victoria Nuland literally said F the EU when she was recorded on that phone call, because they know that the EU is not going to do anything. So it's got to be us, you know. So now we're sending Kerry over there to meet with this yachts guy. You know, and I mean, this is just nothing but bad news. I mean, we're talking about two total neoliberal shills meeting together. I mean, this yachts guy is handpicked by the U.S. government. You know,
he's
what I mean?
A former Goldman Sachs employee.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. And now it makes sense.
Yeah, he's an EU installed central banker. He's going to take over Ukraine's massively rich natural resource base and suck it dry and feed the Europe, Western Europe, and feed the US our endless gluttony for all things consumerism and our endless need for material good. I mean, when you look at Ukraine is the breadbasket not only of Central Europe, but also Russia. It feeds Russia. I mean, it's got a massive amount of arable land. It's over 50% arable, like China's 10%. So they struggle with food. They have to import food. Ukraine exports food. They have oil. They have every metal you could think of in massive mines. I mean, they're a gold mine. So Russia's not going to allow that to fall. And also because Odessa is their warm water port, they have a massive fleet there. I mean, they will fight as long as it's not more expensive than losing it for that port. And they'll fight us. They don't care about fighting NATO.
Now, to me, it seems like the U.S. is kind of importing a banking system into the place, because I just heard that the IMF is now – they're working – now the new Ukrainian government is securing loans through the IMF basically.
Right.
So they're going to get unlimited amounts of this basically UN money.
Well, they're going to get the dollar. They're going to get 50 billion Federal Reserve notes as opposed to 15 billion equivalency of rubles from Putin. So they thought, oh, well, we get almost triple the money. That'll spread down, right? Trickle-down economics works for sure, right?
Tried and true here.
I mean, here's the thing. At least maybe these Ukrainian protesters will get gun rights in their new constitution, and then they'll just overthrow the EU central bankers themselves. I mean, that's the best case. The worst case is that Putin goes in with all the troops and takes it back and then severely punishes the dissidents, you know, but it's probably going to be in the middle where they'll split Ukraine in half. Half will go west, half will go east, because there's 20% or something Russians anyway in the Ukraine. They'll just take over the east part, you know.
Well, it's like almost, you know, all we can do is make sure our government doesn't get involved as right. much as possible, that, you know, as much effort as we can, right?
Well, think about it. If we have to really fight Russia, we had to actually fight them, how stretched thin are we already? I mean, is it inconceivable to think there might be some sort of draft or debtor's draft or something insane like that? I mean, it has been used before. It was used in Vietnam. I mean, that was only 40 years ago, so I could see something crazy like that happening, because war is good for the economy. The economy right now is completely trashed in the U.S. It's on the verge, and a big war will fix a lot of that, right?
Well, it'll bring the manufacturing back.
Right, and we'll pull all the manufacturing out of China, because once we go to a full war, they'll declare it. You'd think Congress would declare it, and we'll all start going to a wartime thing. I've seen it happen before all throughout history. We know we're the extended arm of the Roman Empire, and war is good for the empire. So if they think they can win, they'll go. You know? And I guess they think they can, because they're definitely doing everything they can to prod the whatever, the Russian bear, or whatever they're called.
Well, essentially, the way I look at it, war is just another tax, basically.
Sure.
And it's a tax that you not only pay with money, but you also pay with your life.
Yep.
A lot of the time. So in the end, you know, if you look at what happens during the war, it's the same thing that happens when there's no war. It's the poor getting screwed over, the poor people paying for it with their lives and with their taxes. And then there's these military-industrial complex sociopaths at the top that are getting rich off the whole scheme. On both sides of it, you know, you got the American side and you got the Russian side. You got the Russians doing the same thing that we're doing over here.
Yep. I mean, it's just two sides of the exact same coin. The wild card is China. What would they do if we were actually engaged and had to divert a lot of our attention to that part of the world and kind of had to reshift, whereas Obama said we're going to have the Pacific shift. Well, what if we have to shift back into that middle part of the world and we kind of leave the Pacific, you know, vulnerable? I mean, you can see the ramifications all around. You can't really fight two superpowers, even though it doesn't seem they're as strong as we are. Together would be pretty bad news for us.
Yeah, and China has already stated its position on this, and they're basically on Russia's side on this thing.
More or less, because they don't want to be under this this growing global hegemony that's IMF hegemony, where we have a dollar that doesn't have any value to it being forced down your throat at gunpoint, and then it's manipulated. And there's no real way to control it with any real asset, no concrete something you can hold in your hand that's worth something in case. You know what I mean? It used to be gold back, and then it was the strongest currency in the world. And now it's the weakest, only held together by our military, and that's it.
Yeah, it's still backed by metal, but it's steel and not gold.
Exactly.
Tanks and helicopters and things like that.
Yep.
And then you got what you got in Ukraine, where they're trying to push their central bank into Ukraine. And they got the Goldman Sachs employee going in. They got the IMF working right directly with them. You got John Kerry going over there, which is this guy's one of the richest guys in the whole government. So it's like the one percenters of the one percenters of the one percenters, man. And, right. and what's so sad and the worst part is that a lot of Ukrainians got, you know, they went into this revolution thinking they were going to come out on the other end with something better. And unfortunately, once again, it gets co-opted.
Well,
and whether it's co-opted by us or whether it's co-opted by the Russians, I mean, there's the issue there, man. Like, no country's going to ever be able to pull anything legit off as long as our two governments are in there messing with everything.
Ordinarily, I'd say they have no hope, except they have this ex-boxer guy, right? Vitali Klitschko or whatever, this guy, who's so rich it's hard to buy. I mean, the guy's worth so many millions of dollars, 50, 60, 70 million already. And he's a patriot. He's a Ukrainian patriot, and he really wants a real homeland. And he was part of the whole the organic opposition before it was co-opted into this Dragova party or whatever this neo-fascist party is that's going around basically beating everyone and starting huge firebomb riots. I mean, there's a chance for them if they get a constitution rewritten with gun rights that they'll just take matters into their own hands and they'll right the ship. And that's what we hope for as human beings, is that you can control your own destiny. Even if it's bloody and violent and it needs arms or so be it. Sometimes bad people just need to be taken out like the trash. It's sad to say, but until we eliminate that part of humanity through whatever means it is, we're always going to have to contend with these sick people. And we just occasionally have to rise up. All the good people, even though it's against our nature, have to just rise up for the better good of our own race. The human race.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's an issue that has to be taken care of by each group individually, locally, man. You know, because it's like all we can really control, like all that we can do as Americans is try to stop our government from sending troops in there.
That's it.
I mean,
just being so against it publicly, we're not going to fall for it again.
And it's on the Russians. You know, the Russian people have to get the reins over their own government as well.
Mm-hmm. And they're in a tougher spot than we are. But I mean, the problem is the apathy here. There's people that know what's up, but they just don't want to do anything about it. Why? I don't know. Maybe they don't think they have a voice and it won't be heard, but enough people were like, no, if you're trying to do some kind of crazy thing like a draft here to fight Russia, nah, we're not down. In fact, we'd rather you just be gone. Our current government needs to get out. I mean, if enough people were in that mindset, what could they possibly do? What could they? They're just gone. They're done. They're swept away like sand. The sand is by the sea, right?
And then you got Kerry coming out, and he's like, "You don't just invade another country on phony pretext to assert your right, your interests." It's like,
no. Didn't we do that already with every other war we've had since World War II? It's every time been a proxy war, even in Korea. And that didn't work out either. So the empire can't work unless there's some country with some vastly overwhelming technological advantage. You're never going to have this global hegemony. It's a pipe dream. And not only that, it's just suicidal in a way, because all these guys at the top, as soon as their little war or whatever devious plan they has takes effect, they're going to all be taken out by each other. I don't know why they don't get that.
They're going to eat their own, man.
I mean, not only that, they're just going to hit each other with all these advanced weapons. I mean, don't they get that? These bunkers they build are worthless. They have microwave guns now that'll just fry them inside them. Or they have nanotech. But I mean, everybody can be touched. Doesn't matter who you are. Unless you're some advanced alien posing as a human, you can be touched.
Hey, we got a call coming in. Hold on. Hey, how's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio.
Yeah, this is Desert Hawk. I heard you guys talking about the controversy and strife over there in the Ukraine.
Yeah. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, it is. Seems like people are skipping over a possible solution here. I mean, these things seem to be staged, so to speak.
I agree. This is just another proxy stage.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big. I'm basically broke myself, but I grew up in the '80s, and the basic concept back then was there was going to be a space program that was going to take us into the stars, and technology was going to solve our problems.
Right. I mean, and that obviously never was engaged. I know in the Iron Mountain report that they were talking about swords into plowshares and getting out into space, and some, you know, nitwit group of think tankers thought, hey, war is actually better for us in the long run because we can control the human race outcome better than just blatantly going out into the stars. So
yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hear you there. That's what I'm seeing too. And the thing here is to follow the money. That's the main thing here for me is if the war continues or whatever happens. I do not want to see the Ukrainians get stuck in a, some kind of Iraq conflict type of thing. I mean, that would be terrible.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, who makes the money? Say, who makes the profit?
Right.
This is ridiculous.
Well, I think there's two big groups here coming in. So you got the Russian oil interests, which are most likely also connected with the Russian military-industrial complex and also very well connected within the government, which is why they're able to just send troops in there that quickly. You know, so that tells you that they have really close ties with the Russian government. And then you have the Western banking cartel coming in with their new guy, the new prime minister, which is former Goldman Sachs, and then you got the IMF already coming in and offering loans. You have most of these countries in the West offering loans to these people. So basically, we're already basically offering to finance any kind of conflict that's coming into play. You know, so the military-industrial complex, the banking system, it seems like it's all the same characters that we keep seeing keep popping up and trying to do these things.
True story. I'm going to step off. The last thought I would give out is, why has both Russia and the United States backed off on their space programs publicly?
Right.
Speaking
right.
Public space program. That's another big question for me. I'm going to step off. I'll listen to you on the air.
Awesome, man. Thanks for calling in.
You bet.
That's a good question. You know, why did they? Why has it gone privatized, and why has China taken the lead, and why has the high-definition Chinese moon rover video surfaced on YouTube showing, dare I say, a functional lighted city on the dark side of the moon? And I think we've talked about this before, Nick. That's a Nazi city. I think that was what it was. 2 million of the best and brightest were thrown up there because apparently the moon has water inside it. And as long as you're buried underground and just have enough things on the surface to collect whatever, you can live there. I mean, I have no clue. It just opens up a whole new can of worms. Ender's Game-ish.
Yeah, man. Well, I don't know. It seems like most of the space exploration that we do is basically like mostly like superficial stuff.
Right.
You know, they're not even actually like trying to like capture an asteroid or anything, you know, like anything like that would actually find some like real stuff.
That we know.
But you know, they do have a lot of telescopes. Unfortunately, a lot of those scopes are looking right back down on the Earth spying on us.
Right.
And I think, you know, like the caller was saying a few minutes ago about how back in the 80s we were supposed to have this promise of all this technology and all this stuff. And I was just looking at these documents that were released, Freedom of Information Act, about there were FBI files on Nikola Tesla. And looking at these files, a lot of these are like reports from the field from like agents that were close by to what was going on when Nikola Tesla died. And believe me, I read these documents. I'm gonna post them on the anti-media. My friend from Occupy Tesla, the Occupy Tesla Facebook page, posted it, and I was reading through it. But the FBI was very, very interested in Nikola Tesla and his work, and they went in and they took his work. And according to one report, there were two truckloads worth of paperwork. And it was supposedly at a hotel room. I don't know if he must have been living in this hotel room, you know, one of those old hotel rooms in New York or whatever. But the government got their hands on Nikola Tesla's work, and then who knows what ended up happening with all that research.
Well, the funny thing is that in 2008, which is known as the year of the machine, if people have any idea what that is, it's when NORAD and basically most of our defense systems were thrown into some kind of a quantum computing AI system. Well, the same exact year, Tesla's work was released to the UN, to all of the top scientists within the UN, which is going to become the dominant global hegemony. With the TPP taking over the Pacific, and then we'll have our own stuff in the NAFTA things, and yeah, man, it's at that point now where they have it ready to go, like the whole apparatus is all set up.
Speaking of the TPP, Obama nominated a lobbyist from SOPA to be on the on the panel that's going to be discussing the TPP.
Great, that's just great. I mean, what? I guess people just don't really understand what's going on, but with Obamacare hitting, which is a mandatory tax, it's like now you're under that and you're under the spy grid that'll kind of get you at every turn. It's like, don't you get what you're in now? Like, we are the Roman Empire finally. We're the new Roman Empire.
Now we just need our emperor.
Well, we have him. It's just he's not popular. That's the problem. So the next popular guy will be in, and it looks like it's probably going to be Rand. Looks like they co-opted him. They're going to try to get these libertarian guys into the fold. I don't know why. I think maybe they think they're too much trouble to try to fight them. They're just going to appease them, change the political process a bit, make it look like it's more open, maybe restore gun rights and all these other things countrywide. Because they don't care. If really there was a real uprising, they'll use some advanced tech and knock everyone out, and the guns will be worthless, right? We know that. We know that's just a nuisance. So who knows, man? It looks like we're morphing it. The alternative media and our generation, which is the biggest one ever, is changing our country. It's just doing it so damn slow because people don't get up and change things. But they will eventually, right? We hope.
Sooner or later, one of these generations is going to finally get it. Yep. Who knows? It could be us. I mean, I don't know.
Here's the thing. In Ukraine, like 10 years ago, they had a thing called the Orange Revolution, right? Where they tried to overthrow basically what they considered to be ex-communist KGB type infiltrators. And they got in this other guy, and he was kind of more of a mob mafia strongman type, but he wasn't like super, super Soviet Union. He was more like, I'm Russian, right? We'll do the same thing. When Obama's basically done, they'll get a really good – basically, they'll get a really good pro-American guy, right? A patriot. He'll bring things back, but it'll be all controlled opposition like usual. It'll be a compromise from the elites to us until they can bridge the gap with really advanced robots or what have you.
Well, I don't know, man. I highly doubt that Rand will get elected. I think he's more of a he's like a guy that's there to absorb. He's a guy that's supposed to absorb some kind of momentum, you know. He's there to like take out that part of the activist side of things, you know. I think that's what he's about. That's just because I think the electoral system is completely controlled. I could be wrong. If it's not, I think if the electoral system isn't controlled, Rand probably would win. But I think that it's kind of like that Stalin quote. It's not about who votes. It's about who counts the votes. And I think that's kind of what goes on here. Because I mean, all these electronic voting systems are questionable. They're owned. They're connected to this George Soros dude, which is pretty. This guy is pretty shady. He's like a Koch brother on the.
What did he bet against the stock market? I wanted to hear that story.
Oh, apparently he's betting $1.5 billion against the U.S. stock market, hoping that it's going to crash.
So it's a call on the total. It's a call on the S&P basically. So once it dips, he's betting it'll dip or crash below some insane level within a certain time frame, and betting the house on it. And then when it does, he's going to be like 1,000 to 1. He'll be like a trillionaire or something crazy like that.
Well, the stock market went down like 150 points today or something.
Yeah, and it'll dump down to it probably cut in half.
Russia's stock market was down 10% at one point today.
I know. Well, because, I mean, look at what's happening. We're on the verge. We're on the doorstep. The stocks will take a dump. When whoever has gold and silver in 3 or 4 months is going to be able to cash those in and buy stocks on the pennies and get depression rich just like before. I'm telling you. It's just time tested. This is what bankers always do, and they just grab more and more handfuls.
So, like we talk about pretty often here, make sure you guys diversify your currency. And even if you don't have much to work with, you know, diversify it into food, diversify it into a garden, you know, something like that. A garden, I mean, let's face it, in a really tough spot, a garden can actually, you know, be the thing that keeps you alive. You know, that saves your ass, something that you can trade for, you know, to get something else you need. I mean, who wouldn't want a pound of fresh homegrown tomatoes in a time of need, man? I mean, that would be.
Want it right now.
Yeah, I had one today out of my aquaponic system. It was awesome.
I mean, we always love to say if you had a big enough building with solar panels on it, you eat for free for life, just as long as you get your setup all correct. So those things are possible now, and maybe they'll end up saving your butt. I mean, if things end up bad. So we like to talk about how we can get off the grid, and it's becoming more and more apparent. It's going to be important. If all the resources become diverted to a war effort under the NDAA 14, well, you know, you're not going to be able to get food or water or any. It's all going to be pushed to manufacturing for stuff, for machines, for drones, for autonomous stuff. Everyone will be put to work in some way. So people need to be prepped for that, and the initial hit will be kind of crazy.
So check this out. You were talking about solar panels. I was thinking about how they have those mirror, those solar plants that are based on mirrors, and they like heat water and turn turbines to make electricity.
Right.
But I was thinking you could probably make a greenhouse that has like mirrors on it that when the sun is like heading downwards, it can like reflect the sun into the greenhouse more, because yep. Because then you're getting a direct conversion from sunlight into your plants, you know, so you're not wasting anything in between.
There's subterranean greenhouses where you build basically like more or less a chimney, but it's essentially like a mirrored pipe, a large pipe, and it'll reflect the sunlight in there like it's natural light, and it'll hit the plants, and as long as they got the water, they're getting hit by light underground, so they're always kind of more or less out of the elements, and you can grow year round, whatever. So, I mean, these things are already available. It's just people haven't needed to have them. And everybody's gotten kind of lazy that the grid's provided. But what if it didn't? We have so many people.
It's like that old saying, it's better to have it and not need it.
Right, right.
Need and it if you and don't have it.
If you don't have it and you need it, then, yeah, you're done. Because people are going to be prepared. They're going to be armed, be able to protect all their stuff and have friends with them. I mean, if you're not in that position, it's just it's going to be bad.
Now, I read this article from an activist post. I think it was from Brandon Turberville. But basically what it was saying is half prepping is no prepping. And basically he was talking about how this, when that big ice storm went through Atlanta, how many people were like stuck and were totally screwed and were unprepared. And unfortunately it was the majority of the people down there.
Right.
So, and being half prepared can, you know, that's not really going to do much, you know, so people really need to think about how they're going to, just diversify your way of life, you know.
Well, just prep yourself for, you know, at the minimum a couple weeks just in case there's a hiccup in the supply chain for whatever reason. You're not going to go hungry or run out of water, stuff like that. But we saw even recently with our torrential downpour here that, you know, when your infrastructure is not set up to handle any kind of an extreme, there's a lot of problems, like where we don't have the best drainage on our freeways. How many accidents I saw in the last 2 or 3 days? I mean, it was a lot. It was a lot of cars on the side of the road. And man, even me driving through some of those things, it was hydroplaning action. And we're in a pretty wealthy city. It's just we're not geared up for any extreme weather because nobody thinks it's worth the investment if we never get it. But we're not prepared. Not even as a society are we prepared. We're so dependent on technology. If any hiccup were to happen, we'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, man, it's like everybody's about one paycheck away from being homeless, you know,
and hungry and desperate.
And like I was talking with my friend earlier today, and I was saying, look, if you do got 10 grand in the bank, that's no good in a time of a banking crisis. You're not going to have access to that money. Right. Having money in the bank really isn't the greatest idea right now. You know,
take a few hundred out every week and buy coins of silver and watch your money grow exponentially while everyone else is struggling for their next meal. You know, you're going to have to kind of hide it, but you're going to be in a position others won't be. And as long as you can kind of protect yourself, no one's going to mess with you too much. They're going to be worried about where they're getting their next meal. And then when things kind of normalize again, man, you just jackpot.
Yeah, man. So we just got to get away from all – look at every grid and see if there's a way that you can get around it locally or figure out a way to work outside of it. You know, Craigslist is a great resource, meetup.com. Find people on Facebook, man, people that are on like-minded pages, like-minded friends. I mean, your neighbors, go to your neighbors. I know in my neighborhood, man, there's some people that live right next door to my apartments. There's like a row of like five houses and all of them have fruit trees in them. And, I always see these fruit just like getting old and falling off the tree. Like they're not even picking these things.
Yep.
So it's like
why have we never initiated a Johnny Appleseed bill into a law where we're going to divert a lot of these resources we have for park services and all these manicuring of grass and all these pretty little flowers we have around parks. Make those dudes plant trees, fruit trees everywhere. Just let them fall and everybody that's homeless will have a bunch of food everywhere, all over the place. Not just the homeless, but anybody. Make it an overflowing bounty with all this irrigated water pumping in and making these pretty manufactured lawns everywhere. Screw that. Make food trees now. And it gets rid of so many issues.
It would be bad for the fake economy.
So what? Force it. Make every. We have to get to the point where, did you know, out of your taxes, 400 a year is used to pay the homeless where we could plant 400 apple trees? Something like that's going to make someone go, how do I sign up for that? How do I sign that petition to make that into a law? Because it's just simple economics. It's smarter to have there be just bounties everywhere and have them feed themselves than we have to worry about, you know, food security for the most poorest people in society. It's ridiculous. We're wealthy beyond measure. People have no clue how wealthy we are.
I mean, and then we could even turn these things into big agricultural co-ops owned by the homeless people.
Well, they'll take care of their source of food. They'll take care of it. Trust me. If there's a bunch of fruit trees, they're going to make sure that stuff is manicured and pruned and watered and all that.
Yeah, and they could take it, and then they could harvest it and sell it in the stores.
Yeah, if it's more than they can eat, sure, why not?
Exactly, man. That's how we can start uplifting some of the homeless too.
I mean, Seattle's food forest is doing great. Supposedly, it's already saving the city money because there's just not as many soup kitchens and all those other things that are going to be needed because people are picking fruit off the tree, eating it, and they're good. So, you know, and it's healthy and it's organic and it's probably increasing their health. So there's nothing but positives that can come out of that. Plus, a tree is a tree. Who cares? It makes shade and it drops fruit, all the better.
And then it would even benefit the health costs too, man, because there'd be less people that would be sick if we had these food forests, at least on the public land. And on all the public land, there should be a food forest every single public land.
Absolutely. I mean, what, like where we live, Balboa Park, how many fruit trees could we plant there? 5,000? I mean, we could feed our entire homeless population from Balboa Park, and it's just all this grassy open area. No one's going to care if there's trees every here and there. I mean, they'll like to eat the fruit too.
Oh, yeah, man. We're going to do some guerrilla gardening action pretty soon here, dude.
I mean,
talk about the details and stuff, but I think we're working on something here in San Diego.
How dare you plant arable crop where there was once – a pretty flower that had no value.
I know, man. It's like against the law nowadays.
Exactly.
And we can't stand for that, man, which is exactly why we have to start doing this.
I mean, we really do. We do. I mean, it was the food drive a success on Friday, despite the crazy weather?
Yeah, man. It was awesome.
So, see, there's a need. I mean, there's a need everywhere, and it's not a need that's hard to meet. Just meet it. Make it a priority to have it so that there's not going to be this crazy societal breakdown and upheaval as soon as the dollar collapses because no one can eat. What if I could just go outside and grab like 20 apples? I'll be all right for like a while.
Yeah, man. Fortunately, I can go out and grab – I have a little orange tree here. There's like four of them sitting there that are ripe right now. I can go out and grab that if I needed to.
Yeah.
And then I have my aquaponic system going too. But, you know, we need to get – these kind of things accessible to like people in areas that can't do this, because I can't do that in my apartment. You know, luckily my mom let me, you know, set up some gardens at her place, but at my apartment, I mean, we literally live in a little tiny, like 400 or 500 square foot apartment. I can't really fit anything in there. And my girlfriend has a lot of stuff in her apartment, being that it's so small. It's like nowhere to do it. And then outside, I mean, we have like some herbs growing on the little bricks in the front, you know, the little ledge thing.
Right.
And today we found someone like knocked off one of our pots, dude, broke the bricks. It's like, I mean, broke the pot. It's like, damn.
Yeah.
You know, so there, it's kind of tough, man. And I can imagine in an area where it's just massive amounts of places like that, it would be almost impossible to grow your own garden, man. And one place to look is on the roof of the building. You can, and some buildings you can do it on the roof. And then there's a lot of common areas and apartments and stuff. And then any public land that's nearby. You know, in LA, they were able to overturn after this guy was he was doing this guerrilla gardening stuff, and the city tried to come down on him, and then they put together a big enough push where they got to overturn these laws, where basically now in LA you can plant food on any public property, you know. So that's what we got to start doing everywhere, man. And then not only do we have to get the laws changed, but we have to start planting this food, you know. I mean, this public land, it's technically our land. It's the corporation's land, but technically we're part of the corporation, so it is our land.
I mean, everyone likes parks, but can't we subvert like half of that square acreage to just making co-op farms free to public? I mean, and then I don't know, whatever you grow, you just take, or whatever is available, you take. I mean, we're in a place where we have a massive arable land, about 40%, almost as good as the Ukraine, but we're way bigger than they are. And we can grow enough food just ourselves for the entire world. It's possible for that. So why do people go hungry here? Because our system is just completely, completely convoluted. And people need to say, hey, you know, centralized government's not working on our level. At a community level, we have a lot of people that are hungry. They're cold. They have no place to stay. And this is just stupid. We have empty homes. We have plenty of plots that are empty that can be turned into farmland. The banks have no real value to society. In essence, all they do is they just serve as middlemen for me to give you money or you to give me money collectively. So they don't do anything, and yet they subvert all of the world's important decisions, and they're super corrupt and destroy everything good, basically. So why do we allow this stuff to continue to be centralized? I have no idea, and it has to stop. With, I guess, our generation needs to be the spearhead.
Yeah, well, the other thing the banks do is that they get all the money that comes from the Fed, and then they distribute that money.
Well, the Fed's the central bank of the world. I mean, in a sense, they print out money out of nothing. The Bank of International Settlements basically from there diverts it out to everywhere in the whole world. That's part of this Ponzi scheme, and that's how it goes. And it's just, there's no value at all. There's just nothing. There's nothing there for me and you. If we're in the 0.1%, we're loving it. We can make money out of thin air and go buy real things like mines and water rights and farms and forests and, I don't know, anything you could think of with value, art. While all the rest of the people scrape by paycheck to paycheck, working their butt off, and what do they get? Just the basic necessities. They have to pay for their health care now at the point of a gun. No free college. I mean, there's nothing of value from this system, and yet we just continue to live under it because there's so many distractions and there's plenty of cheap food that's horrible for you.
Oh, but the food's so good, though.
Oh, yeah, it's so good.
I've been thinking, man, you know, the food system, the medical system, all of that stuff is also regressive.
Of course.
The people that are poor are more, you know, aren't as healthy. They eat worse food. They have more diabetes, you know, there are more people that are obese. And what ends up happening to these people, they end up in the hospital for the second half of their lives.
And you that's know, why Obamacare is going to be initiated with a vengeance at the beginning of next year, and be rolled into pretty much your tax return and everything else and the ability to garnish your wages, because it's all part of the plan. You don't make a lot of money, you eat bad food. You eat bad food, you need a lot of health care. You need a lot of health care, you got to pay Obamacare all of your stuff. And then when you fall behind, they just take it anyway.
But Big Pharma's like, well, no. And the insurance company's like, well, these people aren't going to be able to afford to pay us. All these poor, sick people aren't going to be able to afford to pay us. So now we have to do this individual mandate where every single person has to buy it, you know, because it just wasn't enough just to get all the poor people sick. And right. Feed them shit food.
So even if you're homeless, jobless, you're expected to have health insurance under the letter of the law. And it will be enforced by the IRS, who are being armed next year. I mean, this is such lunacy. How do people even imagine that this can be done?
It's dystopian.
Like it's the Connecticut gun grab's not working now. And now everyone in Texas is basically saying, if you even try to do something like this here, we'll just secede and we'll pass it with a real vote. I mean, the power grab is just, at this point, it's lunacy, complete and utter just insanity. And they can't continue. They've overstepped themselves and overextended themselves in desperation. Now it's going to cave in on them. There's so many different analysts who have said this day would come, and it's come with the Ukraine. It really has. It's come full circle. They hit a wall they can't possibly crash through in Putin. I mean, we cannot win a real war with them and then with China fucking around. I mean, we just can't. So it's come to –
And again, when was the last time that we have won a war?
70 years ago. So
we don't really fight them to win them anymore. We fight them to make money.
Right. And the problem is with that is that the people now are hip to the game and they're not keen to be collateral damaged so much anymore. I mean, sure, there's a lot of people that are still Yahoo about it. And they'll go and sign up at the local recruitment center. But by and large, anyone with half a brain knows what's up. Not going to go down for it. Not going to be down for it. Not going to cooperate with the collapse of the dollar and electronic currency and microchipping and all this other crap they have planned. And it's just not going to work. They overstepped themselves.
The people won't stand for it, man, unless we allow ourselves to get stampeded. And that's what we have to watch for. That's what we have to be careful about. Because just like we saw back in 1942 when they struck Pearl Harbor, 1941, whatever, I forget the date. But it put everyone into a panic. It put the whole country into a panic. And look what they got away with. They literally indefinitely detained these anyone that looked Japanese.
Right.
And now you just had Justice Scalia a month ago, saying that he wouldn't doubt if he saw these camps reopen. And the fact is there's evidence to say that these camps are already rebuilt. They're already built. They're already ready to go.
Yeah, they're ready. They're all ready. There's requisitions within DHS's own publicly available job boards for internment specialists and people that have a possibility of subcontracting to feed 30, 40, 50, 100,000 people stacked into these quadruple bunk, you know, basically FEMA trailers. I mean, this is because they anticipate a gigantic, basically houseless population once this complete collapse happens. Anybody without reserves of cash is going to find no income. A lot of them will. And they can't. And if they're already paycheck to paycheck with mortgages, what would that do to them? You know what I mean? It puts them in this compromised position where they can't even afford a food when food will probably double or triple in price. So they're prepping for that. Once you're there, you're at their leeway, and they'll do whatever social experimentation they deem necessary. We all know probably RFID will be thrown in there. And that'll be it. That's the whole game, right? It's the game to get the domestic population under control while they lose this global war, because they know they are. They're losing.
And the last piece of the puzzle to really put the scare into people is the food. So I think the revolution starts in the garden, man. Like, honestly, we gotta put these ideas out, these food forests, gardens, aquaponics, especially here in the West where we hardly get any rain. We need aquaponics because it saves the water big time. You only use about 5% of the water that you would normally use in a regular garden that's in the ground. You know, so we got to keep these ideas flowing. All these ideas of these food co-ops and sharecropping, you know, finding people. There's this new idea coming out of, I think it's Portland. I don't know if you heard about it, but it's this thing called Farm My Yard. And if you have a yard where you're willing to let someone build a garden, but you don't have the time to do it, you just put this sign out in front of your yard, like a for sale sign. And it just says Farm My Yard, and then you just go and you talk to the people, and then you can plant a garden at their house and then share the food.
Right. I believe it's 50-50. They just come and they'll tell you how much they're planning to yield, and they'll just pick off what they get. You pick off the rest, and then pretty much the next season hits, and they so on and so on. I mean, and it's great. That's really what free enterprise is all about. It's finding the solutions to the problems these big corporations are manufacturing for more control for the elite. We just don't play that game. You're right. Food is going to be number one, because if you don't eat in like 3 days, you go a little nuts, and seven, you're kind of certifiable. So they'll play that whole Hunger Game food game with us, and you can opt out of it. Grow your own, have a way to get water, clean water, and then it's kind of game over for them. I know transportation will be a pain in the butt if you have to walk, but you're not going to starve.
Yeah, man. You know, our march against Monsanto is probably going to be at Balboa Park. We could maybe get some people to plant some trees.
Oh, I mean, it should spearhead a whole bunch of stuff. Guerrilla gardening on empty plots should be happening. There's no need to pay some fictional bank for some unused land. Just throw a bunch of seeds in there. What, you really think they have enough people to go check empty plots for?
What are they going to do? Send the cops out? Are the cops going to handcuff the plants or what?
Yes. You know what they're going to do? They're going to say, you're lucky we didn't sexually abuse this plant. You know,
that's sad but true.
And is it time for a police state update? Is there anything we can talk about that's shocking enough that it's a revelation, or is it just more than the same BS as usual?
Oh, man. Well, I think people are finally awake to it, man. You know, and it's the studies coming out about these cops that are wearing the cameras, which I'll admit is kind of it's kind of a controversial issue, because some would say, oh, well, I don't want more cameras. And I think, you know, some people say that it should be more just regular citizens having cameras and GoPros and dash cams and things like that.
Right.
But the statistics show that when these cops start wearing these 24/7 cameras that they have to have when they're on duty, the crime rate or the police violence goes down like 60% or something like that. And complaints about officers goes down like 83%. You know, so obviously when these guys have these cameras on them, they know they're accountable. So they're not trying to pull off some sexual assault. They're not trying to abuse their power. They're not trying to shoot people for no reason, you know. So I think I think it could be a positive step, and there's some cities that are spearheading it. They're actually talking about doing it here in San Diego as well.
Right, and the pilot program's going on right now in Houston. It's going to be 100 cops, and I guess they say they're going to randomly choose 100 police officers. But you know what? It's going to be 100 of the Boy Scouts that get these cameras, and the thugs are not going to have the cameras. We know this. And then they're going to use that saying, we'll see, it didn't really affect anything because we already policed ourselves real well. Well, you know what? That needs to be an open source about how we choose who gets to wear these cameras at first. And then we have to consider the price. Now I'm looking this up right here, and the price is $700 to $1,100 each, so there's more taxpayer stuff. But the good thing is it's way cheaper than the new streetlight cams with microphones. I don't know if you've heard about that. They cost about $2 to $3 million per, and they're all over every major city in the country, right? You know, those new energy efficient white light street lights.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They have cameras in them that rotate 360 degrees with microphones that can pick up to a mile away any conversation. And it's all being stored in that lovely Utah data center forever.
The one that we need to cut the water off to.
It has been, but you know what? I'm sure they got a workaround for that, some kind of coolant system. That was just probably cheaper, but you know what? When you print money out of thin air, who cares about cost?
Yeah.
So, well, you know, that we do need to have that, though. To me, I'd rather have a bunch of cops with cameras and cameras on all the cars and all our cars and maybe even on our persons than all these streetlight cams and all this other stuff. We can be held personally accountable individually, and that'll give us way more security than allowing some crazy, you know, voyeuristic elitist class at the NSA kind of snooping over everything with godlike power to do God knows what.
Yeah, man, and believe me, if we're gonna have this NSA apparatus, it's gonna turn into another arms race. And like we're seeing now, the new phony Cold War is kind of getting ready to kick off here. I don't think it'll be World War III.
But what do they go to from here? What are we gonna have? Mech suit war? I mean, where do you go? We're already at nuke. We're at mutually assured destruction. What does this end at? I mean, Putin's drawing a line in the sand, like literally saying, if you cross it, we'll go to war with the Ukraine. And then they'll wipe them off the map, right?
Well, we're going to see NSA wars, man. And yep. EMP wars and things like this, dude.
Cyber wars.
And earthquake and weather wars and tsunami wars, man. And it's
nothing
it's
outright.
It's not pretty, man. Because, you know, they could easily... You know, there was an earthquake right off of Crimea, supposedly, during the time when Russia was moving in there.
Right.
But we saw that article about how they were testing the tsunami bomb in New Zealand. This was back in World War II. So to think that they didn't improve on this tsunami bomb idea would be kind of foolish to assume that. You know, I'm pretty sure that they have weapons now where they don't even need to use nukes. They can make it look like an accident. They can make it look like weather. They can make it look like an earthquake.
Right. And they have all kinds of sonic bombs that are just basically pressure that pushes outward on a massive scale, and that's how you make a tsunami bomb. And a nuclear bomb is kind of dumb. Now they have a neutron bomb, which is a microwave bomb, and it leaves all the buildings fine and just all the life is fried. So, I mean, we're at the point where it's just ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, man. Couldn't agree more with you. So, yeah, tune in on Wednesday, guys. We're gonna break this Ukraine thing down, see how it develops. Obviously, we're going to be trying to oppose this. Make sure you stay on the anti-media. Help us spread the info.
Let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.